He is a professor here at Michigan State University from the Department of Animal Science. And as I mentioned, he has been involved with the horse racing industry and has been a licensed racehorse trainer since 1997. It's my pleasure to welcome to Current Sports, Brian Nielsen. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Al, I really appreciate being here. You can imagine how this has impacted those of us that have been in the industry, and ever since the race became official, there's been a lot of us kind of in shock as to what just happened.
And I'm sure a lot of conversations surrounded around the horse racing community and your buddies who are also, you know, in the horse racing community. I just want to know, first, I'll start here, Brian. What was your initial reaction after watching Maximum Security cross the finish line as the winning horse, and then upon hearing that, we're going to look at this again. What was your, just take me through your thought process when you were watching the race.
Sure, I'll give you a little bit more background. So I have, for a number of years, been doing predictions. So I teach courses in equine exercise physiology as well as advanced horse management. And my students always ask, given my racehorse background, you know, who do I like in the Derby? So a number of years ago, I started to make my pick. And, and then with the advent of Facebook, I started doing those on Facebook. Yeah, and of course, you do it before the Derby, not afterwards, because everybody can brag how, I had that horse. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure, right?
Right. And anyway, and I've had great success. I'm actually a pretty good handicapper. I've done handicapping seminars at tracks across the United States.
Mm-hmm. What's handicapping?
Where you're teaching people how to pick which horses will be successful.
Gotcha, okay.
I don't want to say bet, because I don't care whether you put $2 down or not. I just love the challenge of picking the right horse.
Right.
And I've been very successful, and again, I narrow it down to the horse, and in the last 14 years, 10 times I've picked the horse that's crossed the finish line first. That's how I have to word it this week.
Right.
I would have normally said I've picked it correctly 10 times, but I don't know if this is a win or not,
because exactly.
I certainly thought Maximum Security was the horse. So as the race was unfolding, I mean, I did see him veer out a little bit, and I just cringed. I mean, I was, come on, boy.
And so then you noticed it initially?
I noticed him veer out, absolutely. And my biggest fear was, you know, you could have a horse really move out a long ways. I've seen him go completely to the outside and lose any chance of winning.
Right.
And that was my fear. Again, I had my ego on the line.
Right.
And and then he strained up. I was like, cool, come on, baby. And I mean, I was screaming so loud, I lost my voice. I was pumped. I was excited. And I've never bet on the Derby.
Never
did. This year, I actually contemplated earlier that morning of putting a substantial bet on it because I was that confident in this horse. And then later on that afternoon, I was actually out riding one of my racehorses, and I was listening to some Derby talk, and I realized his odds were dropping. People were catching on that this is the right horse, and I was like, I'm not going to risk the money.
Okay.
And so I didn't have any money on it, but I still had ego, and he crossed the line, and I was just so pumped because it was exactly as I had predicted the race to go. I even commented I didn't think the horse would be dirty at all,
wow.
And I thought the rain would – everything.
You were spot on with this prediction.
Spot on. And I even said at the end of my analysis of him, this could be a cool story. Because he could have been claimed for $16,000. His dad's stud fee was $5,000. In terms of rich, expensive horses, this horse would not have fit that category. He is, of course, now probably worth a lot more. but I thought this could be a cool story. What I didn't realize is this is going to be a huge story, and not for the right reasons. And of course, as you're well aware, the whole decision, you know, again, celebrating for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden, uh-oh.
Right.
And they're showing the replays, and the horse certainly veered out some.
So it was the right call. We'll start. It, looking back at the video, because
sure.
I didn't know, and this is another point that the trainers and the owner of Country House made when looking at this whole situation. Well, I should say a Maximum Security made when looking at this whole situation. You know, he made the comment that the Kentucky Derby has gotten greedy. Having 20 horses race in the Kentucky Derby, an occurrence like this was bound to happen. What are your thoughts on that, and did you think it was the right call?
So you got two questions there, and I'll address the owner's comments regarding the 20 horses in the Derby. True, that's a lot of horses. We don't do that here in the States, but we do it for the Derby, and that's how it's done. And you entered, and you knew those were the rules, and you had two of the horses in there. Mm-hmm. Shut up. so the thing is, you know, don't be classy on this, and you're going to have a lot more fans. And that was, and I understand it. They took a million plus. I don't know what the horse makes, 1.6 million or something.
Yeah, if you win it was the around
Derby,
there.
Some you lost a lot of money, and you lost winning the Derby, which for all of us, that's a huge dream. So again, be classy, and we'll come back to the being classy comment in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So 20 horses in the field. Yes, that's a lot. Actually, it's only 19 ran. Still, that's a lot of horses. But you knew it was the way, and yes, there's traffic in it. So I don't know about that. But the stewards, when faced with what they are, and the stewards are the officials that have to make the decisions, when you look at it, he impeded the horses to his side behind him. And so they were forced to make the right call. And now that's the issue I have is the real – first of all, there's a lot of people that were victims in here. And by victims, I mean I feel sorry for them. I feel bad for the stewards because they – I'm going to guess that they sat there for 20, 25 minutes trying to find a way not to take him down because they knew – they were going to anger a lot of people and disappoint a lot of people.
And I can only imagine the amount of money
that
changed hands in those moments, right?
Yes.
Oh,
unbelievable. And you don't make many people happy with that calling. I mean, here was a horse that, you know, I really thought this horse had Triple Crown potential.
Right.
He was undefeated. He was magnificent. Won by huge amounts. We really didn't know how good he was. What I loved is when he was challenged in that race, and he'd never been challenged yet, I mean, he looked the other horses in the eyes and said, see you, boys. and it was his race. So you had a horse that had the potential for another Triple Crown winner. I mean, we had this long dry spell of those, and now suddenly they're coming out left and right, which is so fun.
Right.
And it's great for our industry. Now, the people watching the Preakness, it's an afterthought. The Belmont, it's an afterthought. So from the horse racing industry, it looks bad. I feel bad because the stewards had to make that decision. Of course, I feel bad for the connections of Maximum Security, who won the Derby and then had it taken away. And actually, a person I feel bad for, or at least I did a little bit more until recently, the rider of Country House. And the reason I feel bad for him is he's 26 years old. Okay.
He's really young.
I'm getting to be an old guy. You know, I'm 51, 26. You know, I remember, and sometimes you do dumb things when you're 26. And what he did that was dumb was calling foul. And the reason that was dumb is he was on a horse that ran second in the Kentucky Derby at 65-1 odds. Dude, you're a hero. You did something fantastic.
Right.
You weren't impeded and you called foul. All righty. That's a loser approach right there. Mm-hmm. The only reason he did it, and he understood what he was doing, is if he calls fouls, that requires the stewards to review the race. They hadn't.
And he was, this is the thing. This is so key because the Country House wasn't one of the horses, right, that had issues with Maximum Security getting out of its lane and impeding some kind of motion in the race.
Exactly.
But he decided to call foul.
Yes.
And that led to the whole review.
Absolutely.
A horse that had nothing to do with that situation.
Thank you.
Who became runner-up. So you thought that was the wrong move. That was kind of bitter, right?
That
was kind of like, come on, man.
Absolute wrong move. That was so classless. It was smart. It allowed him to win the Derby. But in the long run, that was extremely stupid.
What kind of ripple effect would that have on his career?
I'll tell you what. I would never ride him.
Really?
Meaning I would never put him on a horse because I'm like, dude, you just hurt the horse racing industry by doing something that classless. That was not sportsmanship. That was gamesmanship, but that wasn't sportsmanship.
Right.
He was gaming the system. He said, I'm going to make those stewards look at this. They're going to take him down, and I'll win the Kentucky Derby. And so, yes, he made, $187,000 for that move. But he may have really hurt his career in ways that you'll never know for a long time. And actually, I would worry about very seriously about his mental health. You know, some of these jockeys, the deal is if you look at them, most of them come from other countries. These days, the top level ones, it's so hard to make weight. You look at me and you're thinking, yeah, you're a little guy.
How big are you? For those that can't see you,
five, six,
how many pounds?
I'd like to say 138 right now. I'm probably 140. That's higher than I want to be. I'm also a runner, and so I take my weight very seriously.
And what's the size, Brian, of an average jockey?
Somewhere for these thoroughbred jocks, probably 113, 150.
Yeah, they're really small.
Yeah. This is why I love the sport, because I'm too big to do it professionally.
There you go, right?
So The thing is, but oftentimes they come from other countries, some of them third world countries, because they've been malnourished, so they're smaller.
Right.
And so the thing is I have no idea why I was bringing that up, except...
Well, we were just kind of making the point about, you know, the life of a jockey and the mental health
of
a jockey.
Yeah. So good. Sometimes I get going down the yellow brick road, I lose my way, and somebody needs to bring me back.
But you're concerned about his mental health. Why?
Yeah, and the thing is so oftentimes they're not educated, and they might not have the support structure, you know, not necessarily their family around them and all that stuff. I'm going to guess this guy's going to, if he pays attention to social media at all, he's going to understand he's not a well-liked person. And we have seen jockeys that have committed suicide before.
Really?
Just because some of them get mixed up with drugs and things like that. It's a hard life. And especially if you have to maintain weight, so, you know, you're starving yourself. It's not an easy job.
It kind of sounds like the life of a boxer, like a prize fighter. Even though you're not, you know, we look at horses as these prize fighters, right?
But a lot
of jockey goes through, you know, some really tough strain throughout
absolutely.
Your life.
Absolutely.
Well. I didn't notice that.
I have a lot of them that are friends, and I've seen, you know, the lives. And now some of these guys live great lives, and, you know, they're living at the top of the world and things are going great for them. But it can be a really tough life. And so somebody like that who might not have that support structure around them and people, you know, they become your best friend when you're successful. And then when you're not, they may part ways with them. I would really worry about that. Now, when I was looking up his age, the other thing I noticed is he's from France. Mm-hmm. Okay. So why does that come into play? And some people, well, the French are rude. Not saying that, folks. if you want to, whatever. But actually, more so, we kind of have a tradition here regarding the Kentucky Derby. And Bob Baffert, who, if you follow horse racing,
he's a big wig in the world.
He's great.
Yeah, right.
And his quote was something to the effect of, "We don't call foul in the Kentucky Derby." And so the thing is no. You know, no, if he was the horse, the jockey on War of Wills, who really had to take up, if that jockey wanted to claim foul.
You understand that.
Absolutely. That makes sense, because that was a horse that had a legitimate shot to be up there, who did get taken out by that or had to really pull up on it. I would have had no problem with that. You're the guy on the outside who wasn't interfered with. You just knew you would win the Derby if you can get this other horse taken down. People aren't going to like you for that. And we don't do that with that race. Now, if this is, as Bill Mott, the trainer of Country House, said, you know, if this was, you know, a $5,000 maiden claiming at Turfway Park, sure, that would have happened. But you had the whole nation and millions of people all over the world tuning into this. You know, I have friends in other countries that were watching, you know, through Facebook. We can keep track, and they're all commenting.
Right.
Everybody's watching this. So many people like this. It would have been a great story, and you ruined it for everybody.
I got to know, Brian, again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Michigan State Professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. He has been involved in the horse racing industry and has been a licensed racehorse trainer since 1997. Brian, do you think any modifications should happen in how a possible situation like this down the road should be handled in the future?
Yeah, a couple things. So there's some talk that in other countries except Canada and the United States, the stewards actually have the option to use their best judgment as to whether a horse that was impeded could have beat the horse that impeded them. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, in this case, would Long Range Toddy, the horse that finished last, and that's why Maximus Carity was placed last, is because he had to be placed after Long Shot Toddy, who he impeded. Otherwise, he would have, you know, if he only impeded Country House, who he never touched.
I keep saying that, right?
Yeah. If he would have done that, he would move to second place. But because the horse that he impeded, one of the horses he impeded a little bit, finished last, they had to move him behind him. So people think, oh, it was horrible that what he did, and that's why they just disqualified him from the race. They didn't disqualify him from the race. They put him behind a horse he impeded. But in these other countries, the rule, as I understand it, is especially if it's unintentional. I mean, this was just a horse shying from something. You know, you see the tire track on the deal. And also,
is this real common? Because, you know, we're talking about animals here.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about horses.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's unpredictable what they do during a race. So this is not uncommon to see in a race.
Well, and in fact, one of the reviews of the race that I was looking at, something that I think may have happened just conjecture. There's lots of things. Weather is noise. When you're looking down at the track, I mean, it's been rainy, and that tire track, it's a long line of shiny stuff. And you can actually see the lights from above shining down. And because, you know, it's overcast, and so they have the, you know, the stadium lights or whatever you want to call them up.
Right.
And that glare that horse sees
is the horse.
Certainly a reason why the horse might try to detour around it. That's not the fault of anybody. That's called, there were puddles. I actually had a horse that I was racing myself. When I say that, one of my horses, and I actually had to send him off to a different trainer because we don't have racing for thoroughbreds or quarter horses, which is what I do here in Michigan anymore. so I had to send my horse to a friend down in Indianapolis to run him at Indiana Grand last year. And this was the horse's first race, and it's at night, and they had torrential rains. My trainer friend said, don't even bother coming down here because I'm sure they're going to cancel the race.
Wow.
They didn't. And I figured the odds of my horse doing good are very slim because it's at night and you have the lights on and the track surface is just pure wet.
That reflection bothers the horse.
So you have lights above and you also have lights from the ground. And my horse, he didn't run great at all.
Right.
But that's normal. That's for a horse. And so, like, if he's looking down and he's seeing the reflection of the light, that could have been what caused him to veer off just a little bit, but enough where he impeded the other horse. So that type of stuff absolutely can happen. And
So how do they handle this in the future?
Oh,
should there
thank
be
you
any
for
changes?
Bringing me back. This is why you're the guy
I'm
in
the
control
host, right?
You bet. So they would have the option to only change the order of finish if the horse that was impeded potentially could have beat that horse.
Gotcha.
So in this case, things would have stayed the same.
Would have stayed the same.
You bet. You know, the other little thing that I'll bring up here, and I'll tell you a court case that I was actually involved with.
Okay.
So in, I think it was 2009, a horse won the All-American Futurity, which is the richest quarter horse race. This is down in New Mexico. You win that, you win $1 million. And everything turned out fine. They paid the owner $1 million. And then about a month or so later, they said, oh, we ran the blood test, and the horse came up positive for caffeine. Give us $1 million back. You can understand that doesn't sit real well. And the interesting thing there is New Mexico has a zero tolerance rule, which is a nice idea on the surface, which is we do drug testing, and if you have any trace of anything, you can be disqualified. And anyway, so they said, give us $1 million back. And so then suddenly there's a court case, and I'm actually called in to testify. So again, I'm an equine exercise physiologist here.
This is huge.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. and so it was interesting because, one, caffeine certainly can have an influence on performance, but it's endurance performance as opposed to sprint. And that race is 440 yards. It's like 20-some seconds. It's absolutely drag racing for horse racing. I love it. Those horses reach peak speeds of like 55 miles per hour.
Oh my goodness.
Love riding racing quarter horses. But the deal is there's been no scientific evidence that it helps with sprinting. So, one, it doesn't matter. And the amount of caffeine in that horse's system would be the equivalent of a teaspoon of coffee.
Okay, like what I have in my cup right now. This is like my performance enhancer right here.
You got way more caffeine
way
in there.
Way too much. Yeah.
That means you should be able to beat Usain Bolt right there.
Okay, bring him on.
Come on, buddy.
Usain.
So the deal was the amount of caffeine there was like nothing.
Yeah.
But the deal is there is this zero tolerance rule that was in place. Now, that rule is stupid because environmental contamination, and that's actually what we were able to show, was the likelihood of it being environmental contamination was huge. Won't bore you with all the details. The other thing is the amount in his system was so negligible that it wouldn't have made a difference. Now, I bring all this up because zero tolerance does not mean that if you have a traceable amount, you are automatically disqualified. What it means is the stewards have the option to consider whether or not it would have had an influence. And so, end of that story, that horse is fine. He got to keep the $1 million. Life was good.
Okay, good.
But the deal is I think they've gotten rid of the zero tolerance rule because it's stupid because our testing is so great these days.
Right.
But sometimes we have to allow wisdom to be in place, people to use common sense. This horse was going to win regardless. Nobody else was going to beat him. It should not have changed. But the stewards had to do what I think they had to do.
It was the right move. From when looking at it, at the end of the day, if this foul was called and you got to look at it and make a call, they made the right call. But man, does this hurt the perception of horse racing right now. Well, we got to have you back. Brian, you were absolutely outstanding, my man. When the Preakness is set to race. Can we have you back on
Absolutely.
The airwaves to talk about it?
You bet, definitely.
Outstanding job again. Michigan State Professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science.